Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Okay, so I'm going to hit us up. I did a bunch of work yesterday on my day off, scheduling stuff, getting all our stuff, our ducks in a row for February through like June is going to be pretty crazy, folks.
They're all in a row and you're about to fire.
That's right. Ba-doom. Like Duck Hunt of old. okay, so I'm just going to...
Sneering dog.
Still he mocks us.
I'm going to run down some of the events and stuff we got coming. Next Monday, February 29th, we will be closed for inventory. We're doing our annual inventory. That means you have 1 week, less than a week, to get, 75% off plus 2d6 off a whole bunch of stuff.
So effectively, 77 to 87% off right now.
Yeah.
Basically, people are buying hardcovers and walking out having paid $4 or $5 for them.
And there's still good stuff on that table. Yeah. There's still BPRD trades. I think there's still a Parker hardcover, which is crazy to me.
Monster manuals.
This is old school monster manuals.
With Dave. Pathfinder modules.
Yeah, there's some good stuff in there.
I picked up my monster manual last night.
Did you?
Yes. Well, you know, we were going through it the other week, and we were having a ton of fun just flipping through it.
The nostalgia of the art is crazy. but yeah, so if you want to check out the clearance table this week, it is your last chance before next year's sale. Then on March 5th to 6th, we will be we're co-sponsoring Staple, as always, as we have for every year since we've been Rogues Gallery.
Yep.
And we're going to be bringing in one of the guests. It's a pretty good guest lineup this year. I know Dave is particularly excited that Emily Carroll is here.
Yep. And I conducted a short interview with her for Staple.
Indeed you did.
So people should go by, what is it, Staple's blog.
Go to stapleaustin.org. We'll put a link in the show notes unless I forget. But yeah, Dave did a good little interview with her.
If you're just looking to acquaint yourself with her, it's got a little 5 or 6 question interview, and it links to her website, which has a lot of sample stories you can check out.
Her website has a lot on there.
Yep.
Also, Gene Ha is going to be there, who was one of the guys on Top 10 that we love.
One of our longtime customers, Pete Berryman, was in just yesterday, and he has been reading Top 10 for the first time, and he just completely fell in love with it.
Oh, of course, because it's awesome.
Yes, it is.
And a bunch of other people, plus all the local people. Staples always a good time. That is going to be March 5th and 6th. And then Thursday, March 10th, we are starting a new D&D Adventurers League.
Yes.
That is going to be the Curse of Strahd related. It's called Death House.
Yep.
It's going to be, if you're looking for a time to jump in on D&D, this is a good time. Yep. You'll be first level characters.
D&D tinged with gothic horror.
Yep. You'll be dealing with a mysterious house of the dead and the mysterious Count Strahd, who, spoilers, is a vampire.
Yep. I'm going to guess, because he is like an ultimate high-level villain, the players may not be going after him directly.
No, probably not.
It is probably going to be his machinations.
I mean, if they run up against him, I would suggest running.
Yeah,
they're
run.
They're not going to survive.
Yep. We've been playing that in my gaming podcast, reading RPG, Randy Plays Games.
Yeah.
And we've fought him 3 times. And, of course, we managed to beat him the 3rd time. But we're higher-level characters. But he still basically just goes back to his coffin, and now we got to find him and stake him before
the traditional Dracula problem.
Yeah.
It's a big problem.
But he's a tough guy, and we've had to run from him several times. It's a lot of fun. Then on March 15th, that's that Tuesday, we'll have our ladies' night here in the store. We're going to close early that night at 7 p.m. to general public. And then ladies will be here from 7 to 9 doing what ladies do.
Right. I gathered last time they tried it in the store last time, and it seems like it went really well.
Yep.
Like, super good time was had.
Yeah. Talk comics, play some board games, come out and talk with fellow lady geeks.
Yes.
And then March 19th, that Saturday, we'll be doing our Gaming with Rogues. That is the DC deck building game is what we're going to do this time out. Which we've done before, but I believe Chris Jones, our volunteer, sort of runs that for us. It's close to his birthday, so he wanted to pick a game he liked, so they're going to do a deck building game. That also means that for the entirety of March, if you are a fan of the DC deck building game, or you want to be, if you have your rogue card, 10% off on the DC deck building.
You know what? You should be.
Oh, it's a great game. We love that game.
Yeah, and I like its other various spin-off iterations, too. You learn this game, you'll be able to play all the others.
Yep. Then on April 3rd, we have the Magic the Gathering Shadows Over Innistrad pre-release. That's their sort of gothy setting.
Yep.
Then on April 12th, we are restarting. We're going to do the Reading with Rogues a little differently. We're going to do a bi-monthly graphic novel club, and we're going to have two selections. So basically, in March, the selection is Descender. In April, the selection is Dark Knight Returns. And during those months, you get 15% off the graphic novel, or if you're a Rogue Card member, 25% off.
Yep.
And then basically, when you come out to the Reading with Rogues, we're going to start at 6:30. Run until up to 9 if people want to talk that long. We'll usually wrap up about 8.
Yeah.
But it'll be here in the store. You can come out and talk about Descender, talk about Dark Knight Returns, or if there's other graphic novels and stuff you want to talk about, bring a graphic novel you've been reading and talk about with people.
Yep. And we always range around anyway. I mean, you know, if we're going to read Dark Knight, we're going to be talking about Frank Miller and the billion other things he's done.
And Descender, we'll be talking a lot about Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen, so...
We'll be talking about Batman vs. Superman movie.
No.
Wow, Dave, shut up.
Dave won't.
Unacceptable. That's a movie? This is comic night. Yeah, I'm sure that'll come up.
And then finally, April 30th, that's a Saturday, will be International Tabletop Day, the 4th annual, I think?
No.
I think it is. I think it's at least 4 or 5. It might be 5.
It's
I think it's 4.
It's 5.
Is it 5?
I believe we've done it 5 times.
Okay. Well, at any rate, this year...
One year we didn't get it.
No, the other thing is Free RPG Day.
Oh, Free RPG Day, yes.
Yeah, no. International Tabletop Day, we've done every day, every year since its inception. I believe this is year 4.
Yes.
I think you're right. Yes, you are. Sorry.
And we will be one of the 50 so far chosen preferred partners, which we don't know what that means, but we're going to get some extra swag and stuff to give away.
Yeah, I'd like to be preferred.
And also, we probably will glow.
We will glow. Yes, but we won't have the exact schedule until later, but we'll be running board game demos. There'll be some prizes. It's always a good time if you want to come out and learn some new games or play some games with people. We'll have more details on that as that comes up.
You ever seen The Last Dragon?
Yes.
You know how Bruce Leroy glows at the end?
I'm aware of.
We're going to be like that.
Yes.
We're going to have the glow.
Uh-huh.
All right, you can go on with whatever you're reading.
No, that's it for our store news. That's a lot of store news. But we do have some other news that we want to talk about this week. Starting with, let's go with the most recent, the Powerless, which we've talked about before. Yeah,
this new DC, I don't know if it's a sitcom or if it's
It's a sitcom.
Long. Okay, so it's a 30-minute long show.
NBC, right?
Yes, it's NBC.
And it's like an office sitcom.
It's set in an insurance company in the DC universe. And they've cast some people. So Vanessa Hudgens, where do I know her from, Nick?
She's one of those Disney girls.
Yes, that's it. So she's the lead. She's an insurance adjuster. It sounds like she's going to be like the good girl. She wants to help people and all this kind of stuff.
But she has like a bent against superheroes, I think.
Yeah, well,
okay,
that'll
give it the drama. Like her father is going to, like a building fell on him or something.
Yep.
I'm sure.
I mean, it's not going to be super drama. It's a light comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
But the other two people that just cast, Alan Tudyk and Danny Pudi.
Who's the second one?
Danny Pudi is from Community. He is...
He's actually also shown up in the Marvel Universe.
He was in Winter Soldier. That's correct. Yep. So that's pretty cool, and that's some geek cred. So I'm curious. They're obviously making the pilot.
I think Alan Tudyk is going to be really good at
Alan Tudyk is always good.
It's hard for me to imagine liking a DC Office comedy kind of show, but who knows?
Oh, I can definitely see me liking this.
DC has definitely... I mean... Also, I can't... Vanessa Hudgens, I think, whatever else she's done, I feel like she's kind of one of these lightweights. Like, she's kind of a poppy actress.
But she's in comedy. That makes sense. That's fine.
Yeah, it may work out. It may work out. I don't know. Call me skeptical, but DC has come through with their more serious fare. I just don't know about...
Honestly, I think DC hasn't had a miss with their television.
Yeah, their TV's been good.
I feel like this is...
Yeah, they managed to stop Titans before it broke with Teen Titans before it screwed out.
That hasn't been stopped. I saw, like, the...
Well, it stopped at TNT.
Right, but I think we'll get it some version
Johns and some of the other guys have said the development won't go to waste, that they want to do Titans on TV.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they'll do it at CW, where they really should.
Yeah, I could see that.
Okay, so yeah, Vanessa Hudgens was in things like Sucker Punch and Gimme Shelter and...
Okay, so she's moved on from Disney Girl.
Yeah, she's moved on there, but she wasn't like High School Musical.
Okay,
like that.
Fair enough. Also on TV, in development on Hulu by Daniel Goldberg and Seth Rogen, the guys who are doing Preacher for AMC.
For better or worse.
Are doing a show called Future Man. Which is about it's the guy who played PETA in the Hunger Games.
This is the last Starfighter riff.
Yes, he's a janitor at this company. He's like, he's got know-nothing life, but he's like, Future Man is his character in this alternate world, like a World of Warcraft type post-apocalyptic game.
Yeah.
And he's like the number one player in the world. And then some people come to him and tell him that no, it's a training sequence and that they need him to come help save the future or something.
Yep. Now, is the vibe on this going to be more Last Starfighter or Last Starfighter by way of Galaxy Quest with, like, maybe some more kind of...
I think that's the second thing. It sounds like it's a half-hour comedy.
Especially if you include, like, Seth Rogen and sort of the comedy that he brings to the table.
Well, I'm a little nervous about this. I'm already nervous about their Preacher. But so we'll see. But if Preacher's good, maybe this will be good. Anyway, Hulu's developing it as a pilot.
It sounds like it could be a fun idea.
It could
That's
be fun.
The thing.
Could...
I actually think the guy who plays PETA, which I'm always forgetting his actual name.
Yeah, no, I like
he's
him.
He's a good guy.
And the other thing is, I've been watching Hulu's original shows. There? Like, we talked about 11/22/63,
mm-hmm.
Which I know Dave's seen the second episode and I haven't yet.
Yep.
I really liked Casual. And they've got a new one coming up with Aaron Paul that looks like it's about a cult, maybe sort of a Scientology-esque kind of thing. Looks like sort of a religious cult kind of thing.
It seems like they're stepping up their game a little bit.
They have definitely surpassed Amazon, which I don't think has had a great original, other than maybe like Transparent.
Man in the High Castle.
It was okay.
It was okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
they're not Netflix standards yet, but they are. Right. They're getting some better stuff. So I'm curious to see what maybe they can land a hit here. So also on TV news. I don't know if you guys heard that Daniel Craig doesn't want to be Bond anymore. He'd rather slit his wrist than play James Bond again.
Did he actually say that?
That's what he said.
Those
words. He also said when someone asked him, like, what do you think they'll do next? He said, well, I don't give a shit. I'm not Bond anymore.
So he may be burning his bridges.
But did he walk that back?
No, he didn't walk it back. They walked it back.
Oh, did he?
He does not want to be Bond.
Is he just like, I'm tired of playing this escapist character?
Yeah,
or?
I think he's just tired of it. It's probably a lot of work. And MGM is basically saying... No. He hasn't quit yet. They're trying desperately to keep him on, I think.
Huh.
We'll see what happens. At any rate, regardless of whether he's going to be Bond or not, he has joined a new show called Purity, which is based on a Jonathan Franzen novel. I don't know this guy's stuff at all. I gather he is both loved and hated.
Okay.
Strikes me like that Patrick Rothfuss dude, the people who love or hate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess this is the novel Purity is about a – it sounds like a little bit of a Fight Club – there's a fictional WikiLeaks type thing in here. There's a girl who's missing her father, student loan debt. Sounds like a sort of a thriller, millennial thriller kind of thing. Yeah. A little hackerish and that kind of thing. Apparently, Daniel Craig is attached to play, I'm guessing Andreas Wolf, who's maybe like the big bad of the whole thing, or maybe her, I don't know this much about the book.
Yeah.
Anyway, major role. Purity is hotly contested. It is actually in a bidding war right now between Netflix, FX, and Showtime.
Okay.
They're going 20 episodes straight to series.
Uh-huh.
And he is going to be in the show. So Daniel Craig is going to TV.
That's interesting. I suspect that's going to become more of a general... I mean, it's continuing to be more of an option for people.
Right.
But it's a little bit surprising.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, but... so that's interesting. We'll see what happens with that.
I figure he may figure on the big screen he's kind of too typecast as an action hero.
Yeah.
Here maybe he can stretch his wings a little bit.
Yeah. Finally, one last bit of TV news. We were on TV.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were on. They came out. We talked about this. They came out and filmed us doing an American Crime.
Yep. That was like 3 or 4 months ago.
A little while back. Yeah. And they just. They filmed, it took a few hours.
Yeah.
And we were in the show for about 5 seconds.
Yeah. It is an example of how much kind of work goes into even the smallest moments on a TV show.
But yeah, if you're watching American Crime, there's a creepy looking guy looking through a poster rack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a woman who does not work here. But I'd hire her. She looks, she's got the nose ring and the dreads, and she looks like the kind of person who could work here.
So you just hire him based on looks, Randy?
Is this pretty much
what we're doing?
That's why I hired both of you.
Well,
based on looks.
Hell yeah.
No, she was like an indie girl, which I thought was kind of cool. Yeah. And then she was, you could see over her shoulder, they had done a lot of product clearance.
Yeah.
But they left Saga up.
Yeah.
I know,
they
so you could
a lot of it.
So you could see, so that it was like you could see our image section.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then,
I recall it was like slightly, out of focus.
Totally out of focus, but I noticed it.
Yeah.
But yeah. I was like, no, I know
what
that is.
Readers will know.
Yeah. And unless you knew to look for it, there's no way you'd know it was us.
Right. So they probably accomplished their legal whatever distancing from.
But it was cool. So we were on that, and that was kind of a cool thing. So if you watch American Crime and you're like, hey, I know that comic shop. You do. That was us.
Yep.
All right. Moving on to movie news. There's been some big Guardians of the Galaxy 2 news.
Yes.
I'm trying to stay with... I don't want to get too into spoilers on this, because Comic Book Resources put together like a everything we know about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and I saw James Gunn reposting it like, well, they a couple of these are wrong, but they got a lot of it right. He's like, you consider this spoilerish, and I'm like, okay, I don't want to read this then.
Before you proceed, I have seen some interesting things. What the new what's the movie that J.J. Abrams produces, the monster thing?
The Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield.
Yeah. There's like various viral leaks of stuff and clues people have put together. And
well, he loves doing that.
He does, but like I kind of don't want to see what people are turning up. Yep. I'm trying to avoid it. And then I also saw like another site took like all the footage that's been released so far of Superman, Batman,
and put it together.
And put it together in like a 10-minute sequence in chronological order. And again, it's a level of crazy detail I don't want to be involved
in. I don't like it. I don't approve of it.
Yeah.
But Nick,
do you approve?
It's the world we live in.
But do you?
Do you approve?
Not really. I don't
tacit
like
tacit approval.
I mean, for those who are going to go see Batman and Superman, if they can watch 10 minutes for free,
are you going to watch it?
No, because I'm going to go see the movie.
So I plan you disapprove.
I plan on giving that movie my money for a little bit.
I don't know, Dave. We may have to purge Nick. He's on the wrong side of history.
You're going to get purge election year.
I don't remember. No, it leads us back to Guardians of the Galaxy news, which there was the teaser photo they put out, which has little baby Groot on Drax's shoulder. That was fun. But casting news. So Kurt Russell is playing Star-Lord's dad.
We don't know who that is.
We don't know who that is, and I don't want to know.
No, that one I'd like to see.
But it's cool that he's playing his dad.
Yeah,
right.
And that's pretty much
expecting it's going to be somebody kind of Marvel Universe-y?
I expect so.
I expect they'll
not just, I'm your dad, and that's just a cool thing.
I think it's going to be a known character. James Gunn is that it's probably a known character, but I don't think it's going to be the character that it is in the comics.
No, it's not. He's definitely
not Jason from Spartacus.
What if it's Corsair?
That'd be awesome.
I'd be fine with that.
But I don't know who it's going to be.
Corsair's got another son of somewhat of note.
There was another person that was announced who was in that.
Right. And that is Pom Clementif?
Sure. But it's the character
she's playing Mantis.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, the Celestial Madonna and martial arts master from Vietnam?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Originally?
Yeah.
One of those stories that could really only come out of crazy 70s Marvel Avengers stories. She is such a weird mishmash. And I'm sure that, like they've done with some of the other Guardians characters, like, say, Drax and stuff like that, they're going to pare that down to whatever they think is the coolest stuff.
You know, that's just, you're saying her from Vietnam. That just occurred to me. She's actually, there's like the first Asian character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think. Or at least the first major character.
Yeah, first major character.
So that's good.
Yeah, something.
Of course, I wonder if she's going to be green.
Because
in the comics, she's green.
Yeah.
Although she wasn't originally.
Right. I don't even know how that happened. Did she, when she ascended to Celestial
Madonna, I think she became like a plant or something.
Apparently all,
I don't know.
Apparently all aliens are green because they've got Drax, Gamora.
It's a good shorthand.
Comics, everybody.
Yeah.
Sometimes you become the Celestial Madonna and half plant.
I don't know. Did they show? They didn't. I think I've just seen a picture of the actress.
Yeah,
but
they haven't shown what she looks like yet.
In
the makeup and stuff. I'm sure she was just cast. Yeah. Like,
but that does sound fun to me. Overall, I'm glad to hear just such a weird character is showing up.
They're just starting to start filming. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm excited about Guardians too because Guardians 1 was great, and that was after having to establish everything about the characters and basically tell everybody who it is. Now that he's got all the setup done, can you imagine how much you can do with 2 hours of movie? It's going
to
be fun.
Well, you're still going to have to establish a few other new characters.
Yeah, but it's not going
to
be as...
You don't have to put the band together.
You don't have to put the, put the team together. They start out as the Guardians. Yeah. So I'm very excited about that. All right. Jumping back to just some random stuff. We've got some comic stuff. But before I get there, I want to give a quick shout out to our buddy Jason Murphy. Longtime friend of the store, longtime customer, buddy of mine. He has his first novel, Black Goat Motorcycle Club. It's up on Amazon. You can also get it in paperback. It is a horror...
Suspense.
Yeah, thriller kind of thing. So
Based around, a biker club with dark tidings.
Yes.
Caught up with
that. And I've just started reading it, but I'm looking forward to getting into that. Also want to mention, there is a Gen Con survey going around, and I'm going to put this link in our show notes, but there's a survey going on with Gen Con. It's a real quick one. About basically, if you wanted more than one, they're talking about expanding Gen Con. Getting so full.
I know that
people gotta know, right? But we should explain.
If you're not a gamer, you might not.
Okay.
Gen Con is the big board game role playing game convention.
It's the San Diego Comic Con of gaming.
Yes.
And it's been in Indianapolis for a long time, and it's going to stay in Indianapolis, but they're talking about doing a second one. And the survey is, hey, which one of these would you – and it's like a definitely count me in, or I'd be more likely to go, less likely to go, uh-huh. to the various places they're considering. And one of the places they're considering is Austin.
Yep.
So everybody needs to get on there and vote for Austin so that I can have a gaming convention I don't have to travel for.
You know, I just looking at like the
yes,
there is generally there's a pretty strong conglomeration of gamers in Austin.
Yep.
And surrounding communities. A lot of the comic shops are also game shops. There's other specialty game shops.
Steve Jackson is here.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, the don't they have Board Game Geek Con? Isn't that
in Dallas? It's in Dallas. Yeah.
So.
But some of the other options were New Orleans, which I'd also be okay with. Mm-hmm. But go vote and vote for Austin. We want an awesome gaming con awesome here.
Yes.
All right. So turning back to comics. We got a couple notable bits of news here. First, I want to mention Image has announced they're going to have a standalone Image previews catalog starting in May. Kind of like Marvel has with the previews. You get it free with previews, but it's like going to be probably glossy. It's going to have a lot more art.
Yep.
And so this is a big step for Image. It's like positioning them as the number three publisher very clearly.
Yep.
There's also a kind of notable thing you get with it as
well. That's what I was going to say. The reason I bring it up is because in the first, at least like 16 of them, I think, there's going to be a short, like 2 or 3 page story for Walking Dead that is like the origin of Negan.
Yeah, it's the basically origins of Negan.
Oh, who's like I their have big not bat. Seen that. Yeah. That is very clever of them to put an original story that's much sought after.
I think they're taking what Marvel does with their previews, but they're kind of enhancing a little bit because they're not only doing the pages of Walking Dead. I think they're doing like interviews with comic or their creators and things like that.
They're basically making a monthly Image-only magazine that is distributed through Diamond.
Which is cool.
You know, and we've talked about previews before, but for those who don't know, once upon a time, previews was one giant-ass catalog that we ordered from.
And now it still is.
I mean, it still is a giant-ass catalog.
Marvel broke off, and their sort of catalog comes out at the same time, but it's a little separate booklet.
Yeah.
And that was several years ago.
Yep.
Like 10 years
ago? A long time ago. Yeah.
And now Image is doing it, and we're kind of wouldn't be shocked to hear other people doing it. But the Image one seems like it's even more poised to kind of be a draw for people.
Honestly, if it does well, it could be a game changer for the other companies and be like, well, if they're going to do that, I mean, Marvel could change up theirs and, you know, do a little bit more behind-the-scenes stuff.
We will
see.
Sounds
like an interesting thing.
I do feel like that the only three companies right now I feel like could easily that really quite have cause to do it are probably Marvel, DC, and Image.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, say, a Dark Horse or something or a Boom could
Dark Horse off. Could, because the thing is, it's all DC, it's Diamond's preferred partners.
Yeah.
And those are the four. That's the four that are the preferred partners.
Maybe I just feel like it doesn't quite have the content following.
No, I agree.
That Image does at the moment.
But the interesting thing is, like I said, you get this free if you buy the previews, which is like $5, and you get Marvel as well.
Yep.
Or if you're just an Image guy, it's going to be $2.
Yep.
And it's going to have a Walking Dead story and interviews and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're going to be able to check out all the Image books coming out in 2 months.
And then in, I believe it's April, there will be a separate previews guide for DC. Is that April or May?
It's got to be April.
Yeah.
I
believe it is. It is April because March previews comes out, and then in April, because DC's doing DC Rebirth.
So this is a temp thing for them?
It's only for that month.
Yeah, okay. It's basically just...
But although I guess it could be a sort of trial run.
I think it is a trial run.
Sure.
To see if they want to do it as an ongoing thing.
But
that's interesting.
But we finally have the info about DC Rebirth. And here's the deal. It is going to start with... Sorry, that's just an ad on a page. It is going to start with a $2.99, 80-page DC Universe Rebirth on May 25th. That is written by Jeff Johns, I believe, writes all of it. The artist lineup is pretty impressive. I know Ivan Reiss is on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Ethan Van Shiver.
And basically, this is going to be it's not a reboot.
No.
It's not even a relaunch, really. It's just a refocusing of the line. Like, I think they're probably going to roll in some of the stuff from pre-New 52. They're going to try and keep it's not like they're doing what they did with 52. They're trying to keep the stuff people like and maybe adjust a little bit more to the stuff people
see
did.
Some TV show influence
as well. Yeah.
Well, I think what Dave was saying when we were talking earlier was basically they're taking the idea of what they did with the Rebirth books.
Right.
Like
specifically
Flash
the
and Green Lantern.
Yeah, Jeff Johns did two very notable miniseries, Green Lantern Rebirth and then a few years later, Flash Rebirth.
Yeah.
Both of which I thought the Green Lantern one was especially great.
Yeah.
The Flash one did didn't click for me as well, but it did a very good job of sort of setting up stuff that honestly has been a pretty big part of the TV show's success, the mystery about who killed Barry's mom and all that stuff, which I kind of didn't like in the comics, but they managed to find a really good structure for it on the show.
Yeah.
And I believe that is sort of how they intend to sort of reinvent or find the best of and everything.
Take that sort of rebirth lens and put it over all of the different books.
There's a video floating around of Geoff Johns talking about it, and it's purely sort of the philosophy of it. It's not a lot of specifics, but though you can find a list of all the stuff coming out. But
we're going to talk about that.
He did mention that one of the things they liked about when he did like Green Lantern Rebirth is that they brought in like all the lanterns that had been in. They reforged the core, the Green Lantern core, which had been missing, and that every character got their respect and their shot, you know, that they were trying to get the best of everything that people liked about Green Lantern. And they really did a very successful job of that. So if they can pull off some part of that, then they got a shot here.
Well, I think out of everybody working at DC, I think Johns is the obvious choice to sort of headline this. Yep. I mean, he has that sort of quality about him.
Well, so they're going to do a series of Rebirth specials and then new number ones for everything. Mm-hmm. There is almost everything. I'll get to that.
Yeah.
But they're doing kind of what Marvel did with All New, All Different. It'll be all new first issues. Probably mostly creative team changes, but some creative teams will probably stay the same. And then they're rolling Detective Comics and Action Comics back to their original numbering. So they're going to be like issue 900-something, which is weird.
It's a little bit of a weird call to the sort of venerable quality, but I guess it's sort of, I mean, it makes sense from Johns' perspective in that I know he's a guy who loves the history. And that's the other thing he mentioned in this video. He said legacy is kind of going to maybe become a bigger part of it. Well, I don't know.
Well, I've heard from several customers already when I talk about this. They're always wary of relaunches.
Right.
But when I include that they're also renumbering Action and Detective back to their old numbers, those people are excited about that. So they're trying to get sort of both groups, and I think that's probably smart. But, okay, so here's the deal. There's going to be two types of books. One's monthly, one's bi-monthly. Or not bi-monthly, bi-weekly. There's going to be 32 total ongoings, which is 17 twice monthly and 50 monthly titles. That's a cutback on their line.
It is.
That's a refocusing, which they needed. The other notable thing that people are going to be very excited about is that everything's going to be priced
$2.99.
Yep. So there's fewer total titles, but they're being published more often?
No, some are being published more often.
Okay.
17 twice monthly, 15 monthly. So basically what that means is 50 books a month.
Right.
That's less than the 52 they launched with.
But it's in the same ballpark. It's sort of a rethink of how they do it.
Yeah. So what we've got is they're going to do a bunch of Rebirth specials. There's 23 of those.
Spread out over a couple of months, I think.
Starting in June, and then July, and then in fall there's going to be some more. So yes, they're spreading it all. It's not all hitting at the same time. But in June there's going to be Aquaman, Batman, The Flash, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Superman, Titans, and Wonder Woman all get a Rebirth special.
So almost the big seven. Sort of interesting that Titans makes the cut.
Yeah.
It's called Titans, though, not Teen Titans.
I'm sure this was meant to tie into the Titans show, and that's why they're continuing to develop it.
I bet they'll have both.
Well, I think they've actually...
They have said they're doing both. Yes.
But yeah, I've been thinking, honestly, since the Teen Titans cartoon of like a decade ago that so many kids watched... I've really felt that they need to do more to make that comic one of their flagships, and hopefully they can accomplish that.
I think this is going to have nothing to do with that version of the Titans. So this is going to be the grown-up Titans.
I only mean that insofar as, like, focus, good writers, you know, putting some of their best people on it, not necessarily recreating it.
I assume this
it.
Is the one that's going to have Nightwing and Starfire. And
I presume, yes.
Yeah, I think they have a classic lineup.
Then the Rebirth specials, and this one I'm actually excited about, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey.
Yep.
Which I'm excited. I always thought Batgirl should be with Birds of Prey. If they're going to do, if they're going to be Barbara Gordon, they should acknowledge her Oracle pass and that kind of thing.
Yep.
The only thing that makes me happier is if Felicity Smoke is there running the team. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps,
which is smart.
Hellblazer, Justice League, Nightwing, Red Hood, and the Outlaws. Which, by the way, I would have gone with Red Hood and the Outsiders if you're gonna use
Outsiders would have been a better one.
But I mean, because he's got the Batman tie and Outsiders is a standard a name, and
yeah, it makes sense.
But
Outlaws is what the generation of New 52 readers have. That's how they've known him. So.
Yeah,
makes sense too.
And then in the fall, Batman Beyond, Blue Beetle, Cyborg, Deathstroke, Earth 2, Suicide Squad, Supergirl, Teen Titans, and Trinity.
it's notable that they're going to do another Supergirl series, which they should.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's important that they get that out there.
I'm guessing more influenced by the show?
Probably so.
Trinity's got to be what it sounds like, right? Yeah. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman.
And we've heard rumors that Kurt Busiek's doing it.
I don't know, maybe.
I think that was somebody picking up old news.
I think so, too.
You mean like, because he did a thing.
That's why. I think they saw his name attached to it, they heard Trinity, and they didn't realize that that was from like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
but that is sort of taking the place of Superman, Batman, and Superman Wonder Woman.
Yeah, right. And I'm good with that. Yeah. There's a couple other things, of course. They're not everything getting a Rebirth special. Action Comics and Detective Comics are just coming back with number 957 and number 934 in June. And then there's some other Superman stuff. There's the Super Sons, I think, was what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And the Superman. It's like it looks like a different Superman.
Yep.
These the series that are destined for cancellation.
Probably. And Superwoman.
I will also be curious, by the way, to see what how revamped Superman gets, because I would say that like the new one has found something of an audience, but I feel like there was more discontent with it than content.
Yeah.
Superman and a t-shirt guy and stuff like that.
And then they're also doing Gotham Academy next semester, so they are going to give Gotham Academy another shot. But yeah, it's a pretty good list. I'm curious. I'm mostly skeptical. DC has not really won me over for quite a while now.
I think the thing that makes me most skeptical about it is the that you know, it's essentially the same people still running the show.
Yeah.
There are some shakeups in creative teams, and I've heard some good people on these books. Certainly always want it to come out right.
Yep.
And I think the philosophy behind this one I like a little bit better than the kind of what felt like a more random philosophy of New 52.
Yeah.
So hopefully this is a more focused concept.
Yeah, we haven't quite seen the creative teams for any of these books.
Right, we don't know anything about them. We're just judging off titles.
We have seen some people signing exclusives to DC.
Yep.
But we don't know where they're going to end up.
Keeping a lot of the big ones in their pocket.
I'm sure we'll know soon because the previews will hit online in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
So, all right. That wraps up our news for the week. We'll be back in just a second. We're going to talk about comics for this week and last week. All right. So we are talking the comics for Wednesday, February 17th. And hold on, I hear you say, this is February 24th. But last week, we did not get our comics in time because of the evil cold miser who drowned the East Coast
in
snow.
Evil. We love cold.
We?
Yes, I'm using we in the collective flux.
You're going to mean the royal we.
You meant we love Captain Cold.
Oh, I do love Captain Cold.
See?
Yeah, Captain Cold.
All right, anyway.
We're going to do a quick stop over in last week's past.
Mainly because I loved last week's comics a little more than this week's comics.
Yeah, and I actually, there was lots of, like, some of my favorites from last week came out. So we'll mention that. But before we do the rundown of last week, Nick, tell us what your picks of last week were.
Yes. Well, I want to talk about a Marvel book. Big shocker there. But this one is one that I think a few people didn't quite know what it was on the shelf.
I think people don't know what this is, or they're skeptical
of. And honestly, I have to scold Marvel a little bit right now, because the tiling is really bad, and it just does not...
It didn't roll off the tongue? You don't think Avengers Standoff Welcome to Pleasant Hill?
No, it needed to be shorter, it needed to be more prominent, and maybe have a character that somebody would recognize on the cover.
This is the lead-in to the big Avengers crossover that's going on,
yes,
right?
Enough scolding from me. I actually really, really enjoyed this issue quite a bit. It is the lead-in to the big crossover, which is Pleasant Hill.
Yep.
Assault on Pleasant Hill, I think.
And just as a quick aside, I think that the reason I at least understand part of that, why the marketing was a little weird in the not having a major character on the cover,
mm-hmm.
because the series, this issue unfolds as a mystery, which I'll let you talk about. But I think they want to kind of keep some things under wraps.
Yeah, and this story is very much in the vein of I compare it to the television show sort of Wayward Pines-ish.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of similar.
Well, it's this little small idyllic community, and our lead character is a guy who doesn't remember anything.
He has no memories. He is desperate to escape this place because he knows something is wrong. Of course, over time, that changes. Yep.
And if you haven't seen Wayward Pines, anytime you've ever seen a weird small-town story or whatever, where there is something behind going on behind closed doors, weird.
Yeah, it's creepy. It's Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks, X-Files, Lost in some ways, even.
But viewed through sort of a Marvel Universe lens.
Right.
Nick Spencer, the guy who's been writing Captain America, Sam Wilson, writes this one, art by Mark Bagley. So it looks nice. The story is interesting. But yeah, focuses on one man that's sort of trying to figure out this small town. The S.H.I.E.L.D. is involved in a lot of ways. There's fun nods to certain Marvel characters. And there's a heck of a sort of ending that kind of puts everything on its head.
Yeah, the ending is maybe one of the most interesting parts about it, and it's the one thing, of course, we can't talk about.
No, we can't talk about
it. It's a little bit too big to mention.
But I was really happy with this.
Yeah, there were so many cool twists and turns that I wasn't expecting, and usages of certain characters that I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I hadn't seen them in a little bit.
Well, the other thing I think is worth noting is people are skeptical of crossovers. There always are. I've seen a lot of people like, I don't want to read another crossover. This one is somewhat contained. It is going to be across all the Avengers books.
Yep.
And this did what crossovers are supposed to do, which is I want to read all the Avengers books that follow this. I want to see where this story is going.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's a narrative-based crossover, yeah. Not sort of a, like a...
Hey, buy all our books crossover?
But hey, buy all our books crossover, yeah. I also thought it was interesting when it opens that, like, am I remembering right that, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of under fire for recent revelations? This would sort of correspond with reveal intelligence leaks, the wiki leaks and stuff.
Yeah, the first issue of Sam Wilson, don't they, like, get into hot water over a thing using the Cosmic Cube?
Yeah, and that's what this is about. It's basically, they've been using the Cosmic Cube to sort of subtly alter reality and...
But something occurs to a group of individuals and, and that sort of leads into...
Wheels are set in motion by some of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s other misdeeds.
Right.
Now, I'm not as big on Spencer's always, like, his moment-to-moment writing, but I like the plot of this a lot, and I like how it unfolded. Like, the structure I thought was really strong. You know how, like, when you read... the first time you see Sixth Sense, whatever you think of, like, Shyamalan's other movies... The way that unfolded was really pretty beautifully done. And I thought the structure on this issue leading up to the big payoff was pretty cool.
And I actually liked the moment-to-moment stuff, the little character bits and
stuff. There were good moments in there, for sure.
Dave has an allergic reaction to Spencer the same way I do to Bendis.
Well, yep.
It's just the moment-to-moment stuff.
And I normally do as well. I guess I can turn it on and off.
You're more kind than either me or Dave.
True. And I actually am a big fan of Mark Bagley. I think he's
I am too.
A super talented draftsman.
He's pretty consummate storyteller.
Yeah, and he's also he's very fast and
well, this guy is not going to miss an issue on a book.
And he can be boring. That's the biggest problem I have with Bagley, and I don't feel like this was boring. I felt like this is some of his best work. I think of him as a superhero guy who mostly does good superhero stuff, but this is him drawing on his sort of Ultimate Spider-Man chops. It's all sort of normal stuff. And
his Thunderbolts chops a little bit, too. I think that was good, too.
Yeah.
That's where he sort of made his name, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
New Warriors is where he started. And then Thunderbolts was like his big breakout.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, good. Nick, what was your cheater pick from last week?
My cheater pick from last week was a book that we were all looking forward to.
Yes.
And that is Power Man and Iron Fist #1.
The boys are back.
It's true. The boys are indeed back.
I still haven't read it.
And it's, that's very sad for you, Dave.
David Walker writing
and...
Sanford Green on art.
The basic... story behind it was that a person from Danny and Luke's past gets out of jail and basically asks them to do her a favor.
Yep.
And from there, it kind of goes downhill.
Yeah. Well, I really love... They did a lot with the bromance thing. Like, the two of them are treated almost as a couple that broke up.
Yes.
And that, like, there's this great bit about how... Jessica, Luke's wife, is like doesn't trust Danny or doesn't like Danny.
Well,
and
it's not like she doesn't like him, but
why wouldn't she like Danny?
She just doesn't want Luke in that life anymore.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. It's like if you were married and your husband's old drinking buddy kept coming around, you'd be like, I don't want him out carousing till 3 a.m. We got a kid now.
I mean, it's not like Danny's a horrible influence on Luke.
But he has more of a foot in that superhero universe right now.
Yeah.
And I like sort of the way Danny's kind of treated as kind of the motor mouth, kind of always talking, always getting into trouble, even though it's a little weird.
I don't think of that as his personality.
This is a lighter Iron Fist than we've seen in previous... He is... You mean, because Danny's been treated differently. He was a little more serious and sort of zen in the Brubaker run. Yeah. And then he was always more of the naive fish-out-of-water guy originally.
Right.
This is another evolution of him sort of as the guy who enjoys being a superhero.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. He's always been sort of a guy who can enjoy the work.
He gets a new costume.
Yep, which is pretty good.
Sort of a tracksuit-ish.
I'm always skeptical changing his costume because I think his first classic one is, despite all its 70s flair, a great costume.
It's
a
great costume.
But this is a pretty good one. I mean,
tracksuit, does that mean it evokes like sort of the Bruce Lee thing?
Yeah, a little bit of that.
Very much so.
But Sanford Green is doing the art, and I wasn't sure about it because it seems sort of graffiti influenced, a little bit larger than life. But
I think a lot of people have that sort of feeling going in. But
it was great. The art is so good.
It reminds me in some, not like too much style wise, but the guy who was doing Ghost Rider and Luther Strode along those lines.
Yeah, I can see that.
Has that very energetic punch to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought it was perfect. And I loved the story. I think where it went, some of the characters from Danny and Luke's past coming back is a great idea. I'm excited to see where the story goes.
Yeah, I'm glad to see the way they put them back together. I think they've done a great job. Now I just got to give us a reason why they stay together as a team again. Mm-hmm. But it was a really good first issue. We are out of it right now. We have a whole bunch more coming in tomorrow afternoon. Yes. So
by the time you hear this, it should be
on the shelves. Unless you're listening to it right now, super late on a Tuesday night. In which case, we're closed.
Sorry.
No, you should definitely check it out.
I feel like that they are the quintessential romance in comics.
Yeah.
And so whatever hoops you got to kind of jump through to put them back together, I feel are probably worth it.
Well, it's interesting to see, they are bromance and they've kind of broken up a little bit.
Yeah.
I just like to see them in different places now and then sort of trying to come back together.
One thing about it I want to say, Dave and I, you and I have always talked about how we like metaphor in our comics. Like, you and I would always kind of like that the X-Men could be a metaphor for racism or homophobia and that kind of stuff.
Right.
And a lot of the time when they go too on the nose, like they make superhero stories that are actually about sort of mature reader stuff,
right,
that it sort of loses its way.
Yeah. Right.
So this is metaphor. This is superhero as old drinking buddies or as a college friendship. And it's got a person from their life who like got in some trouble and she needs their help. And it's sort of that metaphor for the people who you don't want to abandon them, but they've had different struggles and that kind of thing.
Right.
It's very metaphorical writing, and I like that a lot.
Used properly, it can give a weight and like a relevance that makes the superhero genre really shine.
Yeah.
Used improperly, it's heavy-handed and obnoxious.
Yeah.
But it sounds like these guys are
it's done well here. The thing is, David Walker wrote the Shaft series that we all really liked.
Yeah.
And he wrote the Cyborg series that we all really kind of didn't.
Yeah.
But this feels very much more in the Shaft vein of things.
Well, at least it's I wasn't sure since I was like, oh, maybe he can't do superheroes. No, it's just Cyborg. Maybe it's just DC.
I think it might be editorial.
Yeah, that's possible.
But anyway, so definitely worth a read. If you're a Power Man Iron Fist fan, you'll love this. And if you aren't a Power Man Iron Fist fan, what's wrong with you? They're awesome.
Now's your time to become one.
Yes. Dave, you have the list in front of you last week. So we're going to run down some other stuff.
Yeah, I was just going to hit a few other notable things from last week. I thought we should mention just that Amulet Volume 7 came out.
Yep, I've read it. It's great. It's beautiful.
Let's see. Astro City was, I've mentioned it every time, and this was one that I would particularly want to because it's a first issue of a new storyline, and I thought it was a great issue. They return to somewhat reformed tough guy villain Steeljack.
Yep.
Who's, if you've ever seen him, imagine Colossus if Colossus was Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
And he's got that world-weary face. And
he's a PI.
He's a tough PI these days. He's kind of, he mentions in his narration that he's, it doesn't really get the jobs that are like the, that require a lot of clever detective work. He gets stuff where they need somebody who's tough and can take, can take a punch. And what happens in this one that's really interesting is one of his old partners from, like, when he was a straight-up supervillain in a group called, like, the Terrible Trio or something like that, she was an old flame of his and part of that group, and in this she's the femme fatale.
Very noir, that's
very
nice.
Very noir. And she wants him to look into a recent bank robbery gone wrong where somebody appeared to use her powers, like, the energy blast and stuff that are her trademark, but it left 7 dead guards in their wake. And she's like, that's not our style. We didn't do that.
Yep.
And she wants him to look into it because she feels like she's being set up to take the fall. She doesn't quite know why. And the interesting thing is, of course, he actually does make the somewhat logical conclusion, because they're probably both like 60 or something mm-hmm. now. He's like, are you sure you didn't just decide to go out for one last shot at it and get sloppy and, right. and you killed a bunch of people?
Right.
And it's interesting because he walks this line between being, you know, kind of like, you know, he was definitely a former bad guy. And so he's not like, I'm going to have to turn you in. But he's like, come on, be honest with me.
Right.
And it seems like she's probably telling the truth, but there's some interesting twists and turns by the end. And just seeing what his life is like, too. I love the character of Steel Jack. Yeah. So anyway, Astro City, always recommended. If you happen to want to just pick this issue up, you would not need anything else to know.
All right. So since you're going to do a cheater pick from last week, I'm going to do one, too. Oh, I thought we were just going to run it on the list, but if you're going to do a whole write-up thing,
yeah, sure.
I'm doing one, too. All right. So Star Wars number 16.
Yep.
This is the start of the Rebel Jail arc.
It was a cool issue.
Basically, they captured Dr. Aphra, Darth Vader's ally, sort of female Indiana Jones.
Yep.
And they are taking her to – it turns out the Rebellion has a secret prison. Now, it has to be secret because the Empire has way more forces. They could break everybody out if they wanted, if they knew where it was.
Yeah, it's a...
So they've got this crazy sci-fi prison that's like over by this this like a near red sun.
Giant planet or something. And
basically Princess Leia is delivering her to this prison. And it's going to be a sort of a story about her being inside this prison. At the same time, Luke and Han have teamed up again to go and get some funding for the Rebellion, which in Han's case involves gambling.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun stuff in here. The artist on this one is Lanil Francis Yu, who I'm not as big on him as I am like Stuart Immonen and John Cassaday, but there's some good stuff in here.
I agree.
And it does remind me of his stuff that he did on Civil War. I actually liked his Civil War book work a little bit better.
Wait, Civil War?
Secret War, Civil War.
Secret War, Civil War.
But there is some nice stuff in here, especially designs for the prison and the guards and that kind of stuff. So
it's also it's a cool locale to throw into Star Wars. You know, we always see these like, you know, ice planet, water planet, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Doing a prison story is kind of a neat thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, Aphra, who, if you've been reading Darth Vader, you know, is a really good character. It is interesting to see her captured and yet very possessed of her wits.
Yeah.
And wondering, you know, can they cage her? What happens if Darth Vader comes for her?
Right.
You know, I'm like, there's some cool stuff going on.
Yep. All right, let's run down the list.
Yeah, we'll just go down the list. I just want to mention Captain America White came out in hardcover. It's a series I liked pretty well from Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. Yep. So that's out. Also, in collected form, Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol gets a new trade. One of the great 90s psychedelia / intellectual comics, but also just pure fun.
Yep.
What used to be volumes 1 and 2 is now a nice big old volume 1.
Right.
Let's see. I wanted to quick mention Harley Quinn number 25, which, although I read it and I thought it was not brilliantly written or anything, was notable because in it, Harley Quinn sort of emancipates herself from Joker.
Hmm, okay.
You know, they haven't been together in years in the comics, but they've been, you know, kind of poisoning her as more of a somewhat Deadpool-esque anti-hero.
Yeah.
And she seems like she's kind of in a relationship with Poison Ivy, like they're sharing an apartment and stuff at this point in the comic. Well, she's called on to do this mission in Arkham to spring somebody, and she runs into the Joker there, and he's kind of like, hey, let's get back together again. You know you can't resist me, and I did, you know, as iconic as Joker and Harley is as a couple, and, you know, while we've seen a million T-shirts based on them, and I think a lot of young couples kind of like the, hey, we're a crazy couple like them.
Yeah.
The thing that he's been an abuser that is always clearly characterized that way has just made it more and more uncomfortable.
Yep.
So I thought, if nothing else, this is an interesting development and maybe a needed one to kind of set Harley off on her own.
Yep.
Power Man and Iron Fist, we talked about that. That's actually all I've got. Randy, if you want to double check.
So also on my list of stuff from last week, because this is some of my favorite stuff hit. There was another issue of Spider-Woman number 4. I've been really digging the Spider-Woman book, and this had the big sort of diehard showdown with the aliens in the hospital. Yep. Had her and the baby. And it's sort of a big issue, and it sort of ends the first story arc of the return.
As always, a beautiful cover. In it, she is stuck to the wall upside down, like watching stuff. And it's what I would say is a typical Spider-Man pose, but being pregnant, she's holding her tummy because it's clearly kind of a pain.
Yep. There's also the new Starve number 6, which is the start of Brian Wood's next story arc in Starve, sort of a post-apocalyptic foodie book that I've always liked. I don't think there's a lot of people reading it here, but hopefully you're reading in trade. I'm really digging that book. And then Huck number 4.
Oh yeah,
which that was really like there was some good. You read that one, right, Nick?
I did.
There's some cool stuff in there. We're starting to get a little more of his history and that kind of thing. The third volume of The Fade Out, which completes the 50s noir story that Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips did. I loved that book. It's one of my favorites that they've done. And then I think that's probably about it for me as far as and Birthright number 14. There was another issue of Birthright, and that's always cool. Nick, I don't know if there's anything else on there that I missed.
Guys mostly covered.
And there's also Amazing Spider-Man number 8.
Right. There was a cool Batman character encyclopedia, which I always have fun for those.
Although it's written kind of like, I would say potentially for older readers. I would say it would be like a perfect thing to give to a 12 or 13 year old kid who's into Batman.
Yeah.
There was another trade that came out that I think some people might take note of, and that was the X-Men collection of Gambit.
Oh, yeah.
Which has all the Gambit stories collected into one volume, which I know a lot of people look for Gambit stories and look no further.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back to talk about comics for this week. All right, we're back, and we are talking comics for Wednesday, February 24th. That's this week. And we're going to start off with a book that's not necessarily any of our picks, but we all kind of liked.
A book that was a fun time was had by all of us.
And that is Street Fighter X G.I. Joe.
We talked about this when it was in the previews, and we were like hoping it would be fun because Street Fighter and G.I. Joe seemed like properties that would mesh well together.
And they are. this is very much the animated series version of G.I. Joe, a little bit more
larger than life.
And Street Fighter, I haven't played a lot of Street Fighter games. I think the last one I played was like 4, maybe.
Yeah.
Street Fighter's bonkers.
Yes.
There's a dude in here named Rufus who seems to be a
Big fat Elvis looking dude.
I mean, I've actually played that character, and it's very true to what that character is.
And then there's a dude called Hakan, who is the master of Turkish oil wrestling and president of Hakan Oils Incorporated, who when he shows up is carrying a demon-faced bottle of olive oil. He's a big red guy, shirtless. And his introductory quote is, "Today I teach you the superiority of Yagu Gurus and the world's finest olive oil."
It seems like, am I correct? He's like a good guy in Street Fighter terms. Street Fighter has never been what I would call culturally sensitive.
Nope.
But there's a sort of goofy fun to it all that somehow lets it be maybe above being stereotypes.
Yep. So basically the pitch here is that Destro is co-sponsoring the World Warrior Tournament with his Mars Industries. And he and M. Bison have secretly whipped up a gadget that is run by conflict. Like, it's powered by fights.
Right.
By one-on-one fights.
Yes, which is insane.
I mean, that's basically...
It's so ridiculous, but if you had such a thing, the Street Fighter Tournament is where it needs to be.
Yep,
it's true.
I do want to mention, there's some cool, fun stuff in here. Like, they match up Roadblock and Hakan. And, of course, Roadblock is the chef for G.I. Joe. So matching him with this guy who makes olive oil and having Roadblock be like, "Oh, this olive oil is great."
Yeah.
It's just like a great little bit. And there's several things like that. I don't want to tell all the matches, but...
Conceptually, it is a bit more of a Street Fighter than a G.I. Joe comic.
It's definitely more Street Fighter than anything
else. Like, it is all built around this contest, and the G.I. Joe guys are clearly sort of infiltrating it, but they essentially are Street Fighters for purposes of this book.
Yep. There's also a big one. They start in round 8. Like, the fight's been going on for a while.
Right.
So in the back, there is a, in addition to sort of the art for the next issue, which, by the way, there's a cover by Kagan McLeod.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is great. So they have a tournament bracket of who won and lost.
Right.
And they have file cards for some of the Street Fighter characters, so that's bringing them into G.I. Joe. And then... They have a little write up of what happened.
Yeah, the paragraph descriptions of some of the matches that led up to this.
Yes.
So it's like, Cammy fought Firefly, the Cobra Saboteur, and stuff like that. And it is ridiculous, but they're all kind of fun.
Yeah.
And like during the actual issue, it's like, I'm trying to think. There's a lot of interesting fights and interesting. They seem to have given each characters a fair shot at each other.
Yeah.
So that, like, when Rufus takes on his opponent, the Baroness, I believe.
Yep.
It is actually an interesting sort of question of who is going to win in this. It is not just sort of a who is, you know, like, more popular thing. Sometimes they will go with some unusual choices in the various victories and stuff.
Yep.
And, for instance, they noted that, like, in one of their backup things, Ken, who's, you know, usually kind of the not quite at the skill level of Ryu, but, you know, one of the badasses, he had the misfortune, apparently, to take on Snake Eyes in his first round.
Right.
And so he was knocked out early.
Right.
And I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. In this continuity, yes, yeah, Snake Eyes just dropped him.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. If you have any fondness for Street Fighter at all, I think you're going to dig this.
Oh, and also, Randy, their acknowledgement of the use of weapons, that is what they call their liberal interpretation of hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, at some point, Roadblock might take out his gun, so to speak.
All right. But so that's our non-pick. Everybody liked it, though.
Yes. Isn't that an amazing book? It's a goofy good time.
It's a goofy good time, yes. Dave, what is your pick this week? I know it's a big mainstream pick.
Yes, my mainstream pick is a hardcover tale of Stone Age adventure from Archaea. it's called Mezzolith, Stone Age Dreams and Nightmares. I would say, let's see, who the creators are. Ben Haggerty, don't know him. Illustrated by Adam Brockbank, don't know him. you know, the Archaea guys, they always tend to get sort of, what I would say are like amazing illustrators, and this is beautifully illustrated. But a lot of creators that I don't know. I think they tend to get the guys who are more interested in fantasy, European-style comics. Like, this is the kind of thing that could have shown up in heavy metal.
Sure.
Although there's no no nudity per se in it, but you can see from this opening splash page, it's pretty beautifully painted and drawn. It is a series of about a half dozen short stories about this clan of cavemen, sort of focusing sometimes through the eyes of one of the younger kids in the group who's kind of wanting to become a hunter like the guys before him and is maybe not quite ready for it. But beyond that, there is an interesting streak of supernatural stuff in it. This is not just sort of just a raw, realistic caveman story. It's almost a little bit more of the mysticism and shamanism that Neil Gaiman might throw in. There's some creepy stuff in here. Weird demonic babies. Honestly, more like some of the weirder actual Native American legends I've heard. And since these are kind of clearly based on a sort of a, you know, they've got bows and arrows and stuff like that, so they're developed long enough in their civilization.
It's not Stone Age.
It is not not Stone Age per se. Yeah, that's my alter catch-all for cavemen.
Sure.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if this appeals to anybody beyond me, to be honest. But I would say, if nothing else, flip through it through the art. If you ever saw the movie Quest for Fire or anything like that, and that intrigued you, this is a good book to check out. And honestly, the supernatural stuff in it is pretty damn cool and weird.
Okay,
so I recommend it on that basis.
I had to look it up. This is actually Ben Haggerty's first comics work.
Okay.
Okay. All right. My pick is a Marvel book, of course. This is a book called X-Men: Worst X-Men Ever. It's by Max Bemis, who is a guy from the lead singer of a band that we don't really know. I don't remember the name of it. Pencils inked by Michael Walsh. I don't know who Michael Walsh is, but the art is gorgeous.
Yeah, it was very good.
I really liked it. Basically,
it reminds me a little bit of Daniel Acuna or something.
Yeah, I can see that. It also has a little of that Chris Samney, Cliff Chang kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Max Bemis writes a story about a young boy. He's in high school. He's having trouble. He's a decent, nice guy, but he doesn't have anything special. Like, he's not an artist. He's not a musician. He's not a skateboarder. He's basically just kind of your average dude. And he's kind of lamenting this, that he's like, I can't meet any girls because all the girls are too special for me, basically.
Right.
So his parents sit him down and tell him, by the way, your mom and I are both mutants. We've been hiding our powers. We didn't feel it was fair to keep you in the closet. We want to give you the possibility. And they're like, you might be a mutant. And he's super excited about it. And they take him to the Xavier Institute. And he finds out his power kind of sucks. And
can we say what
I don't want to say what the power is.
Okay, no, it's better.
But things develop from there. And he winds up basically having to hang around the X-Mansion as this guy with a power that, even though he's technically a mutant, It's almost like he's worse than Cypher.
That's what I was going to say. How does he compare to Cypher?
Cypher's power could be useful in some circumstances.
Bad mutant against which all other bad mutants are measured.
This,
although I like Cypher, I should be clear.
Oh, me too. But this is the most specific useless power I've ever heard. It actually, in the right circumstances, could be very useful, but only once. So it's really good. There's
just
a lot
say
of
what the power is, Randy. Just say it.
I'm not gonna.
Okay.
There's also some great stuff. He has a scene with Beast. He has a scene with Forge. Kitty Pryde is in there. Jubilee. It's one of those things. I was a little worried this was going to just make fun of everybody.
Yeah.
Or be so fannish as to be obnoxious. Instead, it nicely walks that line of like an outsider view of this thing we all know and love.
Yep.
And has a little bit of seriousness to it along with the parody element of it. And like I say, just beautiful artwork.
I have to assume there's a certain level of wish fulfillment in there too, of like just imagining like an average type guy just being able to kind of walk around the X mansion.
Sure, except it's not presented as like wish fulfillment so much as a this is the suckiest way to get what you want.
Right, right. yeah, maybe a be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Or it may not be what you think it is.
I thought this was going to be at best sort of goofy and stupid and fun, but it's actually it's a solid story. I really like this first issue. So
it's a 5-issue mini?
5-issue mini. Definitely worth a look, especially if you're an X-Men fan, especially if you're not currently digging the X-Men stuff. This feels more X-Men to me than a lot of the X-Men stuff. My backup cheater pick is, as always, All New and Different Avengers number 6. This, as you might know from the cover, reveals how the Vision has been working against the team and why. Features Ms. Marvel and Nova coming to save the day. And has it's like the second end of the big second story arc. But it also has a notable development between Captain America and Thor that I really liked. It's character-based. And reading this issue, I'm reminded of how much Mark Waid has made the Avengers book I wanted. I thought no one was ever going to make Avengers for me again, that Bendis and Hickman had forever turned it into like the Justice League of the Marvel Universe. This is the Avengers I want to read. It's a mix of superhero action and character interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like Waid is developing these characters alongside what's going on. It's like what I liked about the Marvel Universe when I started reading it when I was younger. Like, this all feels like it fits with the other stuff going on in the books of Captain America and Thor and all that.
Yep.
But I don't feel like I have to read those books to read this book.
You know, I was listening to one of those Kevin Smith podcasts, and
he
talked about how he's, I guess, friends with J.J. Abrams, and J.J. Abrams once asked him if he wanted to write an episode of Alias back in those days.
Yeah.
And he said he wanted to, but only if he could write them, like, on their laundry day or something like that. He didn't want to write them doing action-adventure stuff.
Right.
I sometimes got the feeling that that's what Bendis basically wanted to do.
Yeah.
He only wanted the downtime. And the tradition is to find that balance between the action-adventure stuff and the character moments. And Waid is just, like, so talented at that.
Yeah, he's great. Waid is doing a great, great book here. Artist by Mahmoud Azrar, and it's fantastic. And just this is a fantastic book, and I think everybody should be reading it. Dave, what's your cheater pick?
So my cheater pick is Faith number 2. This is the Valiant character that was reintroduced, I guess, recently. She was around in the 90s and has been around in some of the other Valiant books.
Yeah.
But this is her in her solo series. We talked about the fact that she's kind of overweight is a thing, but it's not a thing in the story. It's just who she is.
Yeah.
She's more important is the fact that she's kind of a geeky type girl who's also kind of struggling at a job. She's doing a little bit of the secret identity thing. She's working for what's clearly a BuzzFeed analog.
Yeah.
And she kind of wanted to do something a little bit more journalisty, but that's what she got.
Yeah.
Anyway, in this, she's continuing to look into people who are kidnapping psyots. They're mutants in this world.
Yep.
Who during the course of this issue kind of become aware that she is looking for them. She also, there's some interesting interaction with some of her and her ex-teammates, including her former boyfriend, who's kind of now on this like dopey reality show, and she's actually asked to write a piece on it, but they don't know that she's... It's kind of a weird and kind of fun spin on the old Superman having to do, or Clark Kent having to write a piece about Superman or something.
Sure, yeah.
And like she doesn't want to kind of make him look too bad because she still has some feelings for him. But they like take her piece and revise it into a hit piece, and so that's sort of like subplot is percolating is kind of like the goings on of a BuzzFeed company. And then on the more serious front, there's some interesting investigation stuff that she's doing into the people who are doing these kind of creepy kidnappings and keeping like chained up, essentially mutants. And what happens when they find out that she's after them. It sort of takes definitely a turn for the more serious towards the end. Anyway, it continues to be an interesting way to look at the Valiant universe through a character that feels like she's a little bit more on the periphery. I think maybe that's why I found it more approachable, is she's, at least at the moment, not in the thick of any like big major events.
Yeah.
So I get to kind of, I'm enjoying picking up on the Valiant universe through the stuff she knows about it.
Right.
And I also, let's see, who's the artist? I can't read the credits. Is Francis Portella?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I've known that name. I don't remember what I've seen Portella on, but I know that name.
Very talented, though.
Yep. Yeah, I really like it.
You know, Valiant, we talked about Valiant a little bit when I got some of the trades to read and all that.
Yes.
They've got a huge base of talent, and I like what they do a lot. I just think a lot of people are like, where our people are full.
Yeah.
They've like, I've got all the superheroes I need.
Yeah.
You know, I think, but I really do think that Faith is a good sort of gateway into it. And this summer they're doing the 4001 AD crossover, which is like their future, which has got like Rye and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. I love alternate futures.
I do like alternate futures.
And theirs isn't an alternate. Like that is this is our future.
Oh, interesting. Like a set of stone.
Yeah. Thing.
You know, the other thing is, like, they're not, again, although it is superheroes, it's a little bit more superheroes the way The Matrix was superheroes.
Yeah,
So I think that might hold appeal to people, especially if you kind of like the idea of a slightly more realistic one. This is the closer to, in a way, to when I've done superhero campaigns in, like, in role-playing games.
Yeah.
The Valiant universe feels a little bit more like how things play out sometimes than like sort of the more Silver Age-y superheroes.
Yeah, it's like it's not like you wouldn't want to call it like realistic because that implies
not
like
realistic.
Yeah, that but it has a little more realism. It's like everyone doesn't necessarily wear costumes, or if they do, they're not like they don't know how to can't just go buy Kevlar that Tony Stark made. There's a little bit more of a
veneer of realism at the very least. I also would like to mention that Faith. Has since last time we talked about it, has sold out the first issue.
Yep.
And I can't remember if we've got more issues.
We've got more coming.
Coming in. But I've been pleased to see. You know, it was not like a first week sellout, but people have continued to be intrigued. I think it's getting some articles and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I hope to see it continue to kind of ride the tide of interest.
Yeah, me too.
Nick, you already had your picks. You get nothing.
I know.
All right.
Fine.
So other comics this week, Saga number 34, which. Interestingly enough, they've moved forward enough that Hazel is now a character who's old enough to talk. She's basically like, I think she's like 8 years old now. So she's a character, and this is all sort of focusing on her. And I'm really, really digging what they're doing with Saga right now. Astonishing Ant-Man number 5, ton of fun, introduces a new Giant Man who I liked a lot. And it's got some really fun stuff they've been doing. Daredevil number 4, which Matt working for Steve Rogers on a mission, while also delving further into the Ten Finger stuff. Really digging that book. Silk number 5, which is sort of a completion of the first story arc, as Silk is working undercover with the Black Cat and against the Goblin Nation. And this had art by... This does not have Stacy Lee on art, which is disappointing to me, but they brought in Veronica Fish, who's been doing Archie, who I've not been a big fan of, but who I really liked here, so I might need to go back and reevaluate her Archie stuff. So maybe I just was like not ready for the change in art styles. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 5 has Squirrel Girl in the 60s fighting Dr. Doom. And she of course, she's unbeatable, so it's not a spoiler to say that she does beat Dr. Doom, but in a way I don't think anyone would predict. The Goddamn number 3 is a little bit of a backstory on Kane, as well as some of the more of the dark biblical post-apocalyptic story that is The Goddamned.
Flipping through it, Randy, I thought it was interesting to see a flashback to the Garden of Eden in this, which, if nothing else, let the artist kind of stretch his wings a little bit and show this, like, you know, vast, beautiful vistas and stuff like that, as opposed to the cesspit that the world otherwise seems to be.
Chew number 55 is the completion of the penultimate story arc. It is a Hateful Eight cover, which I loved.
That's
and
awesome.
they're really ramping up to the big end of the story here.
We've got 5 more issues.
Uh huh. And some big things happen in this issue. So I'm really digging Chew. I'm looking forward to them wrapping it up and seeing a good strong finish. Also, a new issue of Spider-Man 2099, which ties into the Inhuman stories. An issue of DK3, The Master Race, Book 3, which. I like this. I'm not 100% sold on it, but I expected to hate it, and instead I'm kind of intrigued by it.
Is the centerpiece story a Green Lantern one? Am I correct?
I haven't actually been reading the centerpiece stories.
Yep. Yeah, it is.
But yes, it is. Yeah, it's funny. I'm reading this less for the Frank Miller and more for the Azzarello and Kubert
of it all. And also sort of the world-building stuff, seeing how they're fleshing out.
It was interesting because I wasn't super into the second issue.
Yeah.
It was sort of the reveal of what the master race was.
Yeah.
But in this third issue, I feel like it's kind of turned around. I didn't go in the place in the way that I thought it would. So
right.
It was kind of interesting in that
I would
regard.
Like to read the three issues that have come out so far back-to-back and get them all in my head.
So, I also, this week is volume 2 of Birds of Prey collected by the Chuck Dixon stuff.
Yep.
This is early Greg Land art, which was when I think he was doing his best stuff.
Yep.
I think he's notably better than the stuff he does now, to be honest. This collects Birds of Prey Ravens number 1, which is a one shot I think I've never been able to read. I think it's the only one I've never read. And Birds of Prey number 1 through 11, which is the ongoing series when they had proven themselves through a series of miniseries and one shots, and DC was finally like, okay, I guess girls read comics, and we can do a girls comic series.
And then they went on to do how many issues of Birds of Prey?
Yeah, it went on for a long time. And, of course, now we're in an industry where they finally realized, oh, you know what? If we do Batgirl and Miss Marvel and all these Starfire and Harley Quinn, it turns out girls will read comics, and we were idiots for 20 years, at least.
The thing they never did before is commit to the bit.
Yep.
And now that they commit to it and, like, give a book a chance.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, gets better creators. They're getting better creators on them now. Now these books are doing great.
But Birds of Prey was very much a trailblazer.
Yeah.
It is great action. Great action, great characters, and sort of a mix of superheroes and spies.
Because early on it was just Barbara and Dinah, right?
Yes.
It was just the two of them.
Just the two of them. Yeah, it wasn't a team until later.
Hunter's yeah, they were sort later. Of the Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yeah, it is very much a team book. I mean, I believe Cheshire worked with them in here, or the assassin.
Yep.
But that's sort of a... she's almost the, like, you know, Bond will occasionally work with with a villain who turns against him. Kind of that kind of thing. If you're digging Grace right now,
yes,
you should definitely read these Birds of Prey volumes. It's really good. Dave, what did I miss?
Let's see. The final issue of the second Wild's End series comes out. That's the sort of War of the Worlds as visualized through, like, an anthropomorphic sort of lens.
Yep.
Let's see.
I see a badger.
Did you get Hercules?
I did not.
Hercules number 4. I really love this issue. As it happens, I'd missed number 3, but I was able to jump in on this. What do you call it?
Gilgamesh?
Gilgamesh, has been captured by these... By these gods of, like, they're like Stone Age gods. They're primordial gods that were, like, that we don't know the names to, but were worshipped at, like, the dawn of humanity.
Yeah.
Who are trying to stop themselves from being wiped out of existence by new gods who are showing up.
Who are sort of internet gods.
Yeah, and shades of sort of, you know, Neil Gaiman's American gods, like you mentioned. Although I haven't read that. But there's some cool ones. There's one lady who's really kind of strikingly creepy looking. She has marks on her body that are like a plastic surgery marks all over her skin. You know, like these little measurements that are like harshly geometric and stuff. Anyway, it is and Hercules is, of course, caught in the middle of this, and Gilgamesh for that matter. But I thought it was a great issue. I will be if the series does not make it, and I always. What we're hoping for is to just get a good arc and, you know, maybe a trade or two out of it. And I think Abnett May is going to probably pull that off. The new issue of Grayson is out. I can't remember if you mentioned that. And then Black Magic from Greg Rucka.
Yep.
Hits and Nicole issue Scott. 5. Yep. I'm a little behind on this at this point, and I feel like I need to just wait for the trade so I can read it all the way through and get the full, you know, procedural plot and everything like that. But it's a series that I've been really liking.
I want to say about Grayson. And
Have you read it, Nick?
I did read it. I never thought I wanted to see Nightwing versus Grifter, but it's really awesome.
Oh, I imagine,
I can see that being
Celia and King have done a good job bringing the Wildstorm character.
Yeah, like, they utilize Grifter, Maxwell Lord, Tao, all these people, and I think they did it right.
I feel like if they had had Celia and King on it when they did this 52 integration of Wildstorm, it would have worked.
They would have come up with a more interesting way.
Well, you know, the fact that, you know, Wildstorm was always kind of an edgier, more... espionage-y and sort of black ops-y thing.
The first books that they were launching with New 52 was Voodoo. And they were doing all like the Damonites and all
that. Damonite conspiracy and all that?
Yeah, and it
should have been. It should have been great. And
you know what? I feel like if they had like really made it so that like the Wildstorm stuff was sort of like a little bit on the periphery, but like the kind of the nastier menaces of the universe, then they could have. It could have been great. And then it's interesting to see that they can still do stuff with it. It's not like it's a completely lost cause.
I have to say, and this is partly because I was a Moore and Robinson fan. I liked the Wildstorm universe. I liked what was done with it. I think that they missed a big jump. Just Jim Lee was drawing Justice League. If they had made the Daemonites the bad guys instead of Darkseid and Parademons, I think they should have gone that route. But I think they probably didn't want to commit to that.
Right.
Which is too bad. I think you got to, if you're going to do it, you got to commit to the bit.
Yep.
And I have a few more books that were not mentioned.
Yep.
So Warren Ellis' second issue of Karnak, which is just martial arts, people exploding. Well,
that's
everywhere.
Right. They started the big fight.
Yeah. This is the big fight. And it was worth it. I mean, I don't know if it was worth it for, you know, waiting that long.
Yeah, it was a little bit of wait, but that's okay.
Why it was delayed?
No idea.
There's two different artists on here. I think one of the artists backed out a little bit. Mm. But an artist I really like, Antonio Fuso, came on.
Is Karnak's story, Nick, is it connected with larger Inhuman stuff? Or is he just kind of off having crazy adventures?
He's off doing a crazy adventure. Okay. And there's actually stuff about Karnak's backstory that I knew nothing about that Ellis touches on. And I need to go look up...
he probably invented most of that.
I need to go look up, see if it actually is... Well, if he invented it, it's a pretty dang big thing to invent.
Okay.
So I want to kind of go back and look. I apparently did not know as much about Karnak as I thought I did.
All I know about Karnak is that he's like one of the royal family.
Yeah.
that's all the back history Fantastic Four.
The fourth issue of CM Punk and Colin Bunn's Drax series, which sees Drax take on Fin Fang Foom.
It's a nice cover.
Yeah, it really, really is.
Drax versus Fin Fang Foom's giant ass eye.
It's very true.
It's a giant ass eye.
Yes. The fourth issue of Venom Space Knights, which I haven't had a chance to read, but I really liked what Robbie Thompson and Ariel Olivetti have done with it. And then there's a first issue of a new Hellboy in the BPRD, subtitled 1953, Beyond the Fences.
Okay. Which got a very nice Norman Rockwell-style cover.
Yep. And as always, this is actually Mike Mignola and Chris Roberson, but it's drawn by Paula Rivera.
Oh, man.
Oh, so nice.
It's gorgeous to look Paolo. At. And, you know, just a lot of fun. So there is that.
All right. That is our coverage of this week's comics. We'll be back in just a second to talk about some board games, some TV, a movie, and a puzzle room.
Yes, we did one of the puzzle rooms.
All right, so we're going to start by talking about a... the puzzle room has been a big thing. There's like five of them in Austin. I don't know if you know this.
I've known various friends who've gone to them, and I never quite... They've had good times for the most part, I believe. But I never quite knew what they were.
Yeah. So we had, there's one that stopped, they stopped by here. It's called Perplexium. They're over off 183 and real close to Burnett, right?
Yes.
Basically.
Yes. What's the arcade place
pinballs.
There?
Pinballs.
By pinballs. They're by
yeah,
pinballs.
They're very close to pinballs.
So they dropped off some postcards for us to promote them, which we did. And they also gave us some free passes.
Yep. They told us it was a spy-themed mystery room, and that got our interest.
Yeah. So we went ahead and did this. It was me and Dave and Nick and Amanda and her boyfriend John.
Yep.
And we went and did the spy theme. It was a rogue agent or something. No, not rogue agent. It was, I don't know what it's called.
There's another one, a room that they're preparing, but this was the spy one. And it's all that they have right now.
Yeah. And so we did that. And so basically what is taken, we're not going to spoil everything because, you know, we don't want to ruin their business. And also we want people to be able to go, you should go do this.
Yeah, you really should.
The short version is like, I thought it was super fun.
We had a great time. It takes an hour. You get an hour in the room. It was like, $25 a person, something like that, which not bad for an hour's entertainment.
Yep.
And basically what happens is you are spies. You are basically trying to track a double agent. And so they take you into this room that's made up to look like an office.
Dude, before you get to that, Randy, it's a small thing, but before that, you're in a hallway, and one of the guys, kind of in character, comes out, and he says, you know, he's like, we're about to begin the mission briefing, and he, like, asks you to stand at attention.
Yep.
And then he turns on a monitor, and there's the guy who's like, you know, it'd be the equivalent of talking to M in James Bond.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, recruits, I know that, you know, you thought your first mission was going to be an easy one, but we're dealing with a dangerous double agent.
Yeah.
And they show you some clips, you know, the same way you would in any Bond movie sequel.
Yeah, it's nice.
Some photographs of who you're looking for and all that.
And a little video thing, like, they put a little video in together.
So it kind of gets you in the mode, and then they explain that you're going to actually be investigating. Are we going to go ahead and say what it is?
You're an investigative double agent, and you need to find clues to a certain thing. I don't want to give too much away about it, but basically you need to go into this guy's office,
yep.
And you've got about an hour before he comes back or something happens.
Right, they have a time limit.
And so you go in, you've got a walkie-talkie to talk to them.
Right.
Like, they're your field handler, and they're monitoring you through the cameras in the office.
They give you little prompts if you need it, and occasionally let you know how much time you've got and stuff like that. We were all in character, and I was like, you know, investigating intel in the folder that we found in the desk over, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, you go in there, and there's two desks, there's a wall, there's some books, there's all kinds of stuff, and there's stuff hidden throughout. So you sort of begin investigating, you look for hidden keys, you try to, you know, use the computer.
There's definitely, like, yeah,
you find passwords, you find, and there's all this stuff that you, like, got to figure out, oh, what does this do, what does this do, and... We don't want to give away the big things, but there were a couple moments I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, I kind of thought that these puzzle rooms were maybe going to be more like the puzzle that was in Die Hard 3.
You thought we were
going
to sit down and figure out how to try to get 3 gallons of water into 1 gallon jugs.
Yes. I thought it was going to be like that. Somehow that was like almost like that would be the framework, but that would like let us, you know, activate the computer console or something like that. And instead, it's more like, it's more freeform. You're turned loose, and there's lots of clues to find.
Yeah.
So I felt like, you know, one of the neat things was that we had 5 people, and I felt like we were all constantly doing something.
Yeah.
It's a really packed hour. Like, and that's why, it's like, even though it's only 1 hour, you're doing something that I've never done anything like this before. And so it felt like a really unique experience, and that's what I think made it most worth it to me. But yeah, we were all, like, looking at different places, putting together different puzzles and trying to, like, associate them.
You're basically doing what any spy has done when they're given a situation like this. So you have to search, you have to go through, you have to connect clues.
Yeah. Oh, and also, if you've done video games and stuff, this follows some video games.
I was going to say, live-action roleplay has kind of a bad reputation. Yeah. Maybe not amongst all our fans, but, you know, people think of that as extremely nerdy. Even people who are roleplay look a little bit at LARPing.
Right, it's the nerdiest of the nerdy.
But this is kind of like what you want LARPing to be.
Right.
This is like you're in the mood, you're in the moment, and you're sort of gaming, and if you're a gamer and your thought process is like this anyway.
Yeah.
It's problem solving with a timer. It's so much.
Well, and also the protection values are so high for the room, and sort of everything has kind of got a nice polish.
Yeah, they did say, Perplexium did say that they are very story focused, and you could tell that.
Yeah.
Like they definitely want you to get into the mode and enjoy this not just as a abstract exercise, but
Definitely going to shell out the money to do the Rogue AI.
Yeah, their next room that they're opening in like April? Or is it even March? It's April.
I think it was early April is when he said.
It's called Rogue AI, and it's like sort of a
cyberpunk
2001 paranoia kind of thing.
Basically mixed with a little bit of Portal.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think the AI is trying to
kill a dangerous rogue AI. Yeah. Yeah. It sounded really cool, and just seeing how well they did with this, I can't quite imagine how they're going to do it exactly.
I can totally imagine
it. They said they've been working on this room for 2 months, or a little over 2 months now, sort of perfecting things. And if the level of craft that we've seen just on the spy one is done with that, I am... It's going to be worth that money.
Yeah. Well, they also say you get lab coats.
Did you get lab coats?
Because you get to be scientists.
We each got badges that we actually got to keep that had different agent signs, numbers and stuff.
We should have cosplayed. You should all go in tuxedos and
You know, Randy, you mentioned LARPing and stuff, and I will say, you know, by no means is any role-playing required at all. You don't have to get character. But here's the thing. You will be talking about stuff. It's like, I just found a file that's got such and such in it, and you're basically talking spy talk.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, doesn't that, you know, line up with the photograph we just looked at?
Yeah.
Flip the photograph over.
Yeah.
And then, where you're putting together stuff, and it's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a lot of fun and definitely recommend this.
Yeah.
All right. So to change gears a little bit, let's talk about some other games we played, board games this time.
Yes.
We both attended a board game night, and then, of course, we created a board game night. So I want to talk about one that we all played.
Right.
Which is Pandemic Legacy Season 1.
Right. Which I think we've talked about Pandemic just in general.
Oh, all the time. Yeah.
All the time, because it is probably our favorite game.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Pandemic Legacy, this is a new brand of game. The Legacy game seems to be kind of like co-op or deck building. It's a new mechanic.
Right.
And... this is Time Stories is the same kind of thing, and then Risk Legacy was the first one that did it. Yep. But basically, this is a game where you play multiple games that sort of connect to one another.
Like a dozen linked games that build on each other's events.
It's like an evolving game.
Well, yeah, and it sort of brings in sort of the RPG campaign element to board gaming. So we're doing a... Legacy basically is 12 months of pandemic, where you have 12 months, you have to stop these diseases from destroying the world.
Yeah.
And so we got together, the three of us and Amanda,
yep.
To play, and basically you each have a character...
Yep.
And you write on the board, you write on the characters, like, we named all four diseases.
It's sort of a one-time playthrough in a way, yeah. But that's what makes it feel real.
Yeah.
Like, you know the stakes are high because
you tore a card up.
You tore a card up. I wrote on the board.
Don't do this.
You put stickers on the board for when cities... It's basically the first month, at least... we open it up, and there's a big top secret in there,
yeah.
And there's all these little doors that have stickers and
like
reveals.
Like an advent calendar,
yeah,
honestly.
An advent calendar of gaming.
Yes.
And basically, as things go on, you will discover things like a disease will mutate, or your characters will gain scars. Like, if there's an outbreak and your characters are there, you get a scar from it. So, like, the first game we played, Atlanta, the CDC, which is where we start,
yeah.
Dave and I had – our characters had taken off.
Yep.
And then Amanda and Nick's characters were there. And an outbreak happened.
Immediately outbreak.
And so both of them got scarred. Nick's character became an insomniac, which meant he had one less card in his hand for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Like, forever.
And I forget what Amanda's was.
Amanda's like was OCD, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she couldn't...
She at the end of her turn, if her hand was even, she had to discard so it was uneven.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a fun little, and there's all that kind of stuff. There's also add-ons, like when we finish the first game, we got a level up bonus. Dave's character became a pilot.
Right. We should say, well, I was just going to say real quick, the basic game is Pandemic.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
It keys off of Pandemic, so if you've played it before, that's the heart of it with a few tweaks.
Yeah.
But it's like Pandemic on steroids a little bit, because you are playing it hard mode.
And the interesting thing is also that, that said, they will throw some goodies your way. We failed our first game.
Yes,
we got
hard.
Some,
failed hard.
Failed hard. And so they explained, you know, you do have to live with the consequences of
it.
Like the scars and stuff that we got, we have to keep that. But it did up our funding, which meant we got to put a few extra cards in the deck that were very helpful cards.
Yeah.
So that we had a notably easier time on the second round and were able to win for January's game.
Yeah. And then our funding got cut because the problem was clearly in hand.
Right.
And
that is actually the explanation of the game is, like, if you're winning, then you don't need this extra
so
funding.
So our notion to do this, we started a little late, so we actually had to play January's game in February. We're going to try and catch up at some point so that basically we're playing one game a month.
Yep.
So basically, for what, $90, you get 12 months of gaming.
Yes.
And if you fail one of the games, you play that month again. So it could be up to 24 games.
Yes.
Was it 90? I thought it was 60.
No, it's more than that.
Was it? Okay.
I thought it was 90. It's definitely pricier. At any rate, it doesn't matter. It's out of print right at the moment.
Right.
But I highly recommend this game. I had a great time.
Same here. The fact that, you know, little things like the character cards, you know, we all came up with names for our characters and stuff like that, and the card keeps track of injuries you've got, improvements you do, like, you know, a little, and we'll even have stickers on it that'll go on there. Opening the little cards and stuff and finding out what happens and, like, whether it's good things or bad things.
Yeah.
The mutated virus was, like, definitely an oh shit moment for the group.
Yeah.
Because it happened to be the one that we've been working on.
Yeah.
And we're like, we find out that this one is mutated, cannot be cured. We can only contain it.
Yeah.
And so we're like, in some ways, it was the one good thing was we realized then we could focus on the other three.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it also meant that this one was very hard to deal with and contain.
Well, it's ultimately what killed us, I think.
It is, I think. And, but there was constantly things like that was just boosting the game and giving it this feel it sense of an evolving thing.
And also, we saw several people, we posted a little bit about it on Facebook, and we've seen several people playing it, and everybody's have a different experience with it.
Yep.
So it's kind of cool. I really like this. I'm a little skeptical of games that basically you get one play out of, but it's a really cool mechanic.
Yeah. If this feels like a good first test drive of the concept.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. I also played a game called Big Book of Madness.
Oh, yeah, I watched you play this one.
This is an ILO game. It's the guys who do King of Tokyo and some of those. And this is a cooperative deck-building game where basically it's sort of a – you guys are magic students. It's very Harry Potter-esque.
Okay.
And your students – you're supposed to stay out of the library, but you got bored. You went in the library, and you opened a book full of monsters. And now you have to put them all down using your elemental spells before you get to the final monster, and it just destroys the whole library.
Interesting.
And so each turn, you have a sequence of turns, and you put together your deck of the four elements, you know, the fire, water, air, and forest. You cooperate to try and put the monster away before these bad things happen to you. And then you don't have to beat all the monsters. You just have to beat the final monster. But if you don't beat the monster, it's going to be tougher for you by the time you get to the end.
Hmm.
It was a lot of fun. We won the first game. There's a lot of cooperating, going back and forth, planning, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. As an observer, I watched how y'all would... One person would come up with one idea, and that would key several other ideas.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no, we can't make it work because of this. And then somebody will be like, well, wait, my magic spell allows me to do this and like travel back in time or whatever. And like, so you actually could draw that, you know, ahead of time. So it's like you were able to break the rules in neat ways to like allow the cooperative gameplay to really flourish.
And it's another one. Everybody starts with the same four spells you can cast, but then there are other spells you can buy by spending elements. So I like had some, everybody had like a different spell by the end and we were sort of coordinating all that. It's really fun. I quite enjoyed it. Again, out of stock right at the moment at both our distributors, but we should be getting it back in soon, and I definitely recommend it. Dave, I know you played another game.
Yep, another one on the co-op front, Eldritch Horror.
Okay.
Which is another one in the, you know, the long line of Fantasy Flight's Lovecraft-based games.
Yeah.
This one has a particular globe-hopping bend. It's set in the 20s, like a lot of Cthulhu stuff. But the world is your oyster in it. You know, instead of being focused on Arkham or one of the famous, you know, cities where creepy stuff is going on, you are dealing with a stuff all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And now the interesting thing is, having played Arkham Horror before, you will run into all kinds of, you know, in a given Arkham Horror game, all kinds of craziness happens in the town. And it's somehow, although it's a well-made game, it feels a little kind of almost silly to have, like, all this stuff happening at once in the town, every single different kind of monster turning up.
Mm-hmm.
When you take it global, which is sort of what this feels like, a more polished Arkham that plays faster, has better co-op mechanics, I think, more streamlined than that.
Mm-hmm.
And on that global scale, the variety of monsters and stuff like that somehow makes, you know, it makes more sense. You feel like it's a larger span of time, that there's bigger travel involved. But in some ways, you're moving around sort of like you do in Pandemic. There's shipping lanes and, you know, buying sea tickets for sea and otherwise running around. But, you know, you're kind of doing the things you did. You're getting each one of you has a special type character. You're getting better gear as you go along. You're trying to close up gates from monsters.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I didn't like about Arkham Horror really feel like they've been reined in on this one, and I had a much better time with it than I did with Arkham Horror. And I know some people love that game.
Is this a longer play game, or...?
Not really. I feel like we played it in about 3 hours as a first
playthrough. For a first game, that's not bad,
But I feel like it's probably could be done in about two and a half hours by, like, a team that knew it pretty well or had played it even just once.
Right.
One interesting thing is they usually use a lot of the same characters in their Arkham games. You know, like, just recurring concepts, and they're also in the Lovecraft role-playing games.
Right.
This one, and they, over the years, they've expanded that. This one, all the core characters are what the characters who had been basically the secondary or tertiary characters for other examples and games before are all the main characters in this. So there was a lot of really interesting characters, a little bit more multi-ethnic, different, you know, more gender options. And it just I really liked all of our characters.
Hmm.
So and we won, so that was cool.
Nice.
We were playing this slightly lighter game, but it was still there was some really dramatic stuff that happened in it. It has a lot of the stuff that I like about co-op games with along with creepy Lovecraftian horror lurking over it all. So I'm going to highly recommend it.
Okay,
And especially maybe recommend it to people who felt that Arkham Horror was maybe a little overwhelming.
Okay.
And also a little unfocused in as far as like it had lots of fiddly bits and options. But like until you kind of get good at it, you're not quite sure which ones are good to fiddle with. Like, do I want to up my strength or my speed on this turn? We can change it, but I don't know if it helps or how it helps. You don't have any of that kind of weird stuff in this.
I have to admit, I'm curious to try this now. It sounds pretty good. And then there was one other game that I finally introduced you to. We've talked about before, one of my favorite games that you got to play this week.
So we just kind of want to throw a shout out to Machi Koro.
Yes.
The card and dice game.
Yes.
Yeah, now that I've seen the mechanics, well, you know, I told you at the time, even after a few turns, it struck me at how elegantly designed it was.
Yeah.
And it's not, I don't always notice that in games, but Pandemic is one of those, yeah, where it's like the rules were very quick to pick up.
Yep.
The card that they had to keep you up on things was a really great little reminder card, yep, that really set it all. And Machi Koro is one that you pick up very quickly. It's kind of fun right out of the gate.
Yeah.
And I think because it's another one of those where even when it's not your turn, aside from the fact that you want to keep up with your opponents, but you can get helpful things when it's not your turn. You, yeah, can get payouts of money and stuff like that. And you want to watch in case somebody is gunning for you, because there's certain cards when they come up,
yeah,
will allow them to, you know, steal from your city. But, you know, everybody's trying to get their own, build the best city, and I'm not going to go through the rules again, other than to say I thought that it was indeed all it was cracked up to be.
Yep.
I think it's a good one that's very approachable for, like, folks who are not regular board gamers,
yep,
or if they've never done the Euro games. So I'd particularly recommend it for families, for game newbies, or for anybody who's looking for, like, a good, like, 40, 45-minute kind of game.
Okay, yeah.
I had a great time with,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I love that
play,
game.
I'd like to play the main game a few more times and then try it with some of the expansion cards.
Yeah. Nick, I know you saw The Witch. I know that Dave has some interest, so we'll keep it spoiler light.
Yeah, I'm not going to go too far into it, but I will say I've seen tons of articles floating around about how audiences have felt duped by this movie a little bit, that it's not sort of a
It's not horror, a straight horror movie.
And I will say it's not. It's more of a supernatural thriller in a lot of ways. And
kind of a dark period piece,
it
too.
It is.
Right?
It actually is about a family in the 1630s.
Okay, so it is sort of witches.
Is it in Salem or
New England?
Okay,
it's,
okay,
so basically very much about a family that gets banished from sort of their home,
uh-huh,
and they have to sort of move out of it, and kind of in this weird isolationist on the edges of a forest, they sort of make their new home. And it's sort of, I mean, it definitely is about kind of witchcraft and all this other stuff, and how it sort of tears a family apart.
But is it about, here's my question, if it's, it may not be possible to get into, but is it about real witchcraft in the sense that, like, there's actual spells being cast, or is this about people being wrongly persecuted for it?
I will say there are witches in this.
Okay.
That's not a huge spoiler, that's actually not, I mean, but it definitely is involved, but it's sort of, it is about more focused and centralized on a family and sort of their relationships and their kind of how it affects them personally, mm-hmm, to be so isolated from what they're used to.
Sure.
And the character acting is really, really good. The cast is, they've done some things, and like one of the father is from like Harry Potter and a few, uh-huh, other things, and you'll recognize them. And the mother, I think, was in Prometheus. That's where I recognized her from. But the kid acting is so good.
Hmm.
I was really shocked by that, because I tend to have a problem with kid actors in a lot of movies.
Yeah, there's not a lot that come across as natural.
I mean, there've definitely been some exceptions with like Haley Joel Osment and Sixth Sense and a few others. But I think they're particularly well done, especially the sort of the oldest daughter, her name is Thomason, and she is sort of the central character in a lot of ways. But Robert Eggers, who's the director, creates a great mood for it.
I've heard it's got really impressive cinematography.
It does. It looks dark and foreboding, and really, I found myself kind of on the edge of my seat, just because I liked the sense of doom that it was creating. Mm-hmm. It wasn't sort of oppressive, it was just there, and a lot of that was built by the music. I don't know who the person who did all the music was, but
that's
sort of
notable.
Like in the way that It Follows,
yeah,
had those kind of rich musical cues.
Yeah.
Sort of the tension of the music in this gets you ramped up and sort of involved in it. And I actually thought it had great payoff. I was really impressed with the movie.
I'm a little bit torn. I've heard a few ups and downs from people, but I have wondered how much of that was people who did in fact feel like they just didn't see the movie they expected to.
Yeah.
So maybe with a little forewarning, I might well enjoy it more.
I think we've seen that with, It Follows, and there was the Babadook.
Babadook, I think most people didn't quite know what it was. I think It Follows was more or less what it promised.
Well, I think this kind of new turn of art house horror is right. not exactly what people expect out of straight up
horror.
And
you would compare this more to those movies yes. than, say, a more traditional horror
yes,
movie?
Yes, very much.
Yeah, so. The Babadook was like a dark character study and like a
but it was also
a very intense family drama.
Yeah,
and the horror thing was definitely a big part of it. But yes, it was not a traditional horror movie
and
with lots
follows,
and lots of scares.
It does have sort of some of the conventions of horror. It definitely tried to do its a new thing and a
yeah.
new take on it. So I think that's where people are walking away dissatisfied because it's not what they expect.
Right.
And I liked that it wasn't what
well,
I expected.
I liked Babadook quite a bit. I did not like It Follows much. So
yeah.
I'm curious where I'll fall.
I don't
which.
Know if you'd enjoy it so
I don't expect to see it until it shows up on Netflix or something.
It is. I will say it took me a minute to plug into the language because it's definitely Old English. And they, it's played straight. I mean, they're using turns of phrase that I'm like, I kind of have to remind myself of what certain things. It's very sort
a
of.
A little bit more like, well. I know, even as a Shakespeare fan, anytime I go to see a Shakespearean play, it's like there's a 5 to 10 minute period where I have to like have kind of hear the language
yeah.
before my brain starts to wrap around it and
yep.
like becomes pretty interpretable. So yeah, it sounds like this may have a little
yeah.
bit of that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it though.
All right, finally, I want to talk about a show on Netflix. Netflix's new original show, since they do one about every 2 weeks, it seems like.
It does seem.
More than that, if you count all the kids' programming, it's,
yep.
they're dropping shows every day. This show is called Love. It is Judd Apatow,
okay.
who you might remember from TV. In TV, he has done – I mean, he's gone off to do lots of movies. But in TV, he did Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared. And this is a sort of a romantic comedy set in L.A. It stars Gillian Jacobs from Community. Britta. The guy who's the lead is this very nerdy dude, whose name is, I pulled up IMDb and I lost it. I had
Dramatic
to pull
up. Paul.
I'm glad that it's Britta. I've always loved her on Community.
Yeah. And she's good here. She's playing, you know, Britta was always funny when she was a mess.
She was a downer.
And and this is her basically playing a mess. Okay, so Paul Rust, who is the co-creator and plays Gus, who's sort of our romantic lead. Huh. Again, a very nerdy dude. And very, very much Gillian is out of his league.
Yeah.
You can tell that from the outset. But basically, she is she's a producer on sort of a Fraser Crane-esque show.
Okay.
She's the Perry Gilpin of that show. She's the Roz. And her boss is played by Brett Gelman, who's a comedian. You've probably seen in various
yeah.
things. And then, Gus is a tutor for a like 12-year-old girl who's the star of or one of the stars of a show called Wichita, like witch, which is like a supernatural type show. And he's her tutor. She's a total like diva brat. He can't get her to focus, and he's having to deal with like he wants to move up and be a writer for the show, but they are just like they only want to just get her to pass the classes and whatever. So there's a lot of sort of inside baseball, you know, insider drama
yeah.
stuff that Apatow does really well. It is sort of meandering, and, you know, Apatow's a guy who just lets scenes run. There's a lot of improv and that kind of stuff. But it's basically sort of they have sort of a meet-cute where they both break up from previous relationships in the first episode. And then they have a sort of relationship develop, and it's a question of whether it's going to be friendship or romance. And it's all about sort of being 30-something singles in Los Angeles. And it's really fun, somewhat dark, but also just hilarious and sweet and kind of everything you expect from Judd Apatow. I got 5 episodes in last night. I would have definitely watched more if I had not been trying to go to bed at a somewhat reasonable
hour. 5 episodes in a single night?
Yeah.
So is this like a
half hour or hour?
Half hour.
Okay.
12 episodes?
It's half hour, but it's Apatow half hour, so some of it is like 40 or 45 minutes.
Okay.
So there's no like specific time.
So is it like a 12 episode?
I believe it's 13 episodes.
Okay, so definitely leaning towards the new style of...
Yeah, yeah. Netflix doesn't do the like 20 episode
no,
shows for the most part,
don't.
So... I definitely recommend this. It's really fun. If you have any fondness for sort of romantic comedies, especially ones that are sort of counter standard, you know, if you like Apatow's work.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like it's like not necessarily the standard romantic comedy, but one of these ones that somewhat inverts expectations
yeah.
or
I don't
explores
know if
it from a different angle.
This is a great, you know, comparison, but that NBC show, what, ABCs of Love? Or
The A to Z, which
a
I really loved, yeah. Even that, A to Z was even a little more on the nose, like romantic comedy.
Right.
This is... this is definitely a bit more like what it's like to be single. It's, I want to say girls, except I don't really like girls.
I've tried to get into girls. I just can't.
But it also reminds me of You're the Worst, which I really love. It's Man Seeking Woman on FX. It feels more like an FX show a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, I really dug this. I'm looking forward to digging into the rest of it this week.
I saw it pop up in my Netflix queue last night, and I was like, I should try this, but
I definitely recommend it. And I will say, the first episode is a bit of a slog, to be honest. I liked it, but it is all set up.
Okay.
So give it two episodes at least before you decide. I want to really dig in.
At 30 to 40 minutes, that's not too hard to do.
Yeah. All right. That about wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week. And until that time,
Yo-Jo!
And Street Fighter. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.